Chapter 5. Kayla Dorn held her breath as the strange little aircraft plunged from the sky in a spiraling tailspin. At the last second, the plane swung up in a wild G-force swoop. It soared and dipped like a kite on a swing, then leveled off, although the wings quivered and the aircraft pitched and yawed as if it were on an invisible roller coaster. The pilot finally brought the plane under a semblance of control and put it in a landing glide. He held it steady, but before he could touch down, the left wing dipped sharply and dug into the soft sand. The wing snapped off where it joined the fuselage, and the plane slammed into the beach at an angle, skidding several yards before it came to a jarring halt, tail section high in the air. The engine shut down, and the beach was suddenly quiet, except for the lap of waves and the crackle of burning grass. The reporter and her colleagues stared like zombies at the plane wreck. They were too exhausted to move, drained by their swim to shore, still panting from the run for their lives. Kayla was in the best shape of the three, and her legs felt like putty. When the stubby plane had first appeared, they hadn't known whether it was friend or foe, but there had been no question as to the intentions of the horsemen with their wild yells and drawn swords. They had been out for blood. The plane looked like a bird that had flown into a fan, and it seemed impossible that its pilot could have escaped without harm. But someone moved in the cockpit. The pilot got one leg, then another, over the cockpit combing and climbed out. He seemed to be all right as he walked around the aircraft, hands on hips, inspecting the damage. He kicked a buckled wheel as if he were checking out a used car and shook his head. Then he turned to the television crew, gave them a friendly wave, and started in their direction, walking with a slight limp. Lombardo and Dundee moved in and stood protectively at Kayla's sides. She was more interested in appraising the stranger. He was tall, slightly over 6 feet, and the broad, powerful shoulders of a nightclub bouncer filled out the navy sweatshirt. He wore tan shorts, and his muscular legs looked as if they could propel the husky body through a brick wall. As he came closer, he removed his baseball cap to reveal his steel-gray, almost platinum hair. His bronzed face was unlined, except for laugh crinkles around the eyes and mouth. She guessed his age at around 40. Dried blood dripped down one cheek and soaked the bandana around his forehead. The aircraft landing must have been hair-raising, yet he seemed as if he were coming off a game of tennis. "Good afternoon," he said, with a wide grin. "Are you folks okay?"
"Yes, we're fine, thank you," Kayla replied warily. "What about you? You're bleeding."
He touched the wound absentmindedly. "It's only a little cut. I'm still in one piece, more or less." He jerked his thumb at the battered ultralight.
"Wish I could say the same for my transportation. They just don't make them like they used to. You don't happen to have a roll of duct tape?"
Kayla ventured a smile.
"Your plane has gone beyond the duct tape stage," she said. "I believe the term insurance people use is totaled."
The stranger grimaced.
"I'm afraid you're right, Ms.
Dorn. Kayla Dorn. This is my producer, Mickey Lombardo, and his assistant, Hank Simpson. We're with the Unbelievable Mysteries television series."
"I thought so.
My name is Kurt Austin. I'm with Numa."
"Numa?"
Lombardo stepped forward and pumped Austin's hand.
"Boy, are we glad to see you. Lucky you came by."
"It was more than luck," Austin said. "I've been looking for you folks. You were supposed to rendezvous with the Argo this morning."
"Sorry about that," Lombardo said. "We took a detour to check out an old Russian submarine base that's supposed to be around here."
"The captain of the Argo isn't too happy. You've delayed his departure schedule. It might have saved us some grief if you had let us know that your plans had changed." Austin was smiling, but the gentle, scolding tone of his voice was unmistakable.
"It's my fault," Kayla said. We thought we'd only be a few hours. We intended to call you at sea, but the fishing boat we hired didn't have a workable radio. The captain had to return to port for engine repairs, and he planned to get the radio fixed and give you a call. That must be the fishing boat I saw steaming away from here. She nodded. He was going to pick us up in the morning. Thank you for saving our lives. I apologize for putting you through so much trouble. No trouble, he said, reluctant to chastise the bedraggled group any further. He gazed at the wrecked aircraft. Maybe a little trouble. What made your boat capsize? Someone on shore shot at us and killed the Turkish man who was bringing us in, Kayla said. A wave caught us broadside and the boat went over. We hid under the Zodiac and tried to move it away from the beach, but the surf was too strong and we came almost straight in. She glanced toward the dune where she had first seen the attackers. Do you know who those men on horseback were? Austin didn't reply. Although he seemed to be studying her face, Kayla became aware that her wet t-shirt and shorts clung to her lithe figure. She self-consciously plucked at the sand-caked front of the shirt, but the fabric insisted on plastering itself to her skin. Austin sensed her discomfiture and stared off at the smoke rising from the dune. My guess is that they weren't the local equestrian group out for a jaunt, he said. Let's take a look. He climbed up the sloping beach with the others trailing tentatively behind. The fire had almost burned itself out. They walked through the charred stalks of grass at the top of the dune. Austin saw sunlight glinting off something on the ground and went over to investigate. It was a saber. He picked the weapon up and tested the heft and balance. The sword's long, curved blade was perfectly weighted to give the arm greater striking power. Austin's jaw muscles clenched as he contemplated the terrible damage the scalpel's sharp edge could inflict on human flesh. He was examining the Cyrillic writing etched into the blade when the Australian called out. Dundee was standing in a knee-high patch of unburned grass, staring at something at his feet. What is it? Austin said. Dead guy. Austin stuck the saber point into the sand and waded through the thatch. Dundee pointed to the body of a man who lay on his back, glassy eyes locked in a death stare. A black beard and mustache, matted with sand, hid most of his features. He could have been in his 40s. His head was twisted at a wrong angle. Blood soaked one side of his face, which had a caved-in look to it. Austin said, I'd guess he fell off his horse during the fight and was kicked in the head. He was not a callous man, but he felt no pity for the dead horseman. Lombardo had retrieved his camera from the beached Zodiac and was filming the battle site. He and Kayla came over to see what the others were looking at. Lombardo let out a low whistle. What kind of get-up is that? Austin knelt by the body. Looks like something out of the Wizard of Oz. The dead man wore a long, muddy gray coat that buttoned up the front and baggy pants tucked into black boots. His black fur pillbox hat lay a few feet away. Red epaulets decorated each shoulder. A pistol holster and scabbard hung from the wide leather belt that encircled his waist. Slung across his chest was a cartridge belt. A sheathed dagger hung from a cord around his neck. Good day, Dundee said with wonderment. The man's a walking arsenal. Austin searched the grass around the dead man. A few yards away, he found a rifle, and he put the stock against his shoulder and worked the well-oiled bolt. Like the saber blade, the barrel was etched with Cyrillic writing. Austin was a collector of dueling pistols, and he had accumulated a general knowledge of antique guns. The rifle was a Mosin Nagant, more than 100 years old and in mint condition. He uttered a silent prayer of thanks that the horsemen weren't carrying modern automatic weapons. A single Kalashnikov would have ripped him and the goonie to shreds. Austin handed the rifle off to Dundee and went through the dead man's pockets. Nothing,
He unpinned the metal starburst emblem from the front of the hat and pocketed it. Lombardo had finished filming the battle scene, and Kayla suggested shooting some footage around the one-story cinderblock buildings farther inland. "Not a good idea," Austin said, pointing to the trail of hoofprints leading toward the structures. He'd been worried that the horsemen would make a return appearance, but hadn't said anything because there wasn't much they could do about it. "In fact, I'd suggest that we get out of here as soon as we can." He rested the rifle on his shoulder, retrieved the saber, and started walking back toward the beach. Kayla caught up with him on the crest of the dune. "Do you have any idea what this is all about?" she said breathlessly. "Why these men would want to kill us? You know as much as I do. I thought they were filming a movie until somebody took a few shots at me. It's a good thing for us that their aim was bad." She paused. Austin was studying her face the way he had earlier. "Is there anything wrong?" "I'm almost embarrassed to say." "I find it hard to believe that you'd be embarrassed. You hardly seem the shy type." Austin shrugged. "Well, in a manner of speaking, you might say we've met before." "Sorry, I'm sure I would have remembered. Not literally. Believe me when I say this. You bear a striking resemblance to the face of a princess I once saw painted on the wall of an Egyptian temple." Kayla was tall, with a good part of her height invested in long, shapely legs. She had a smooth mocha complexion and ebony black hair that she kept long with a natural tight curl. Her mouth was full and almost perfect, and her eyes were a dark amber. As an attractive woman working in a man's profession, she thought she had heard every male line invented. But this was a new one. She gave Austin a sidelong glance. "That's funny. I was thinking that you looked as if you'd fallen off Captain Kidd's pirate ship." Austin laughed and ran his fingers through his disheveled hair. "I suppose I do look like a pirate, but I'm not joking. You're a ringer for the young woman in the temple. You're quite a bit younger than she is, though. I believe her portrait dates back to about 4,000 BC. "I've been called a lot of things," she said, "but never an Egyptian mummy. Thanks for the compliment, if that's what it was, and for saving our necks. There's no way we can ever repay you, Mr. Austin." "You can start by calling me Kurt. And may I call you Kayla?" She smiled. "Of course. Now that we're old friends, how about being my guest at dinner?" She glanced up and down the deserted coast. "What did you have in mind? Something out of the Boy Scout handbook? Roots and berries?" "I only made it as far as Cub Scouts, and foraging was never my forte. I was thinking more of something like duck a l'orange. I can almost guarantee a table with a water view." "Here," she said, going along with the game. "No, there." He pointed out to sea where a turquoise-hulled ship could be seen steaming in their direction. Casa Argo. They say the chef used to work at the Four Seasons before Numa stole him. "My mother didn't raise any stupid kids," Kayla said. "I'd be a fool to refuse an invitation like that." Conscious of her unkempt state, she said, "I don't think I'm dressed for a fancy dinner." "I'm sure we can find something appropriate aboard the ship. I'll ask when I call for reservations. My radio's the only thing that wasn't smashed when I landed. Maybe you can round up your friends while I hail the boat. But you might want to hurry them along. We're on Russian territory, and I don't have my passport. We shouldn't overstay our welcome." Kayla followed Austin with her eyes as he made his way back to the damaged ultralight. She sensed a story. Who was this guy? This was no nerd.
She called out to Mike and Dundee and told them to wrap up their filming. Then she hurried to catch up with Austin.